Hi there, this is the Romance Program. I'm volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. I've got one story coming up this hour from True Romance Magazine. It's called, I'm Carrying My Mom's Baby. Here's the story. How's your ankle? Do you want bravado or the truth? It hurts that bad, huh? Yeah, I really turned it. Steve grimaced as he shifted in his chair, which was set on the front porch of a bed and breakfast tucked away in a charming little town. I hate to mess up everybody's weekend. It looks to me like everybody's having a good time. I'm sorry you're missing the walking tour. Here, let me fix that cushion for you. My parents, my husband Charles, and Steve's wife Audrey, had all decided to walk downtown to explore some of the shops. Knowing my mom and Audrey, it was likely they'd be gone for a couple of hours. Steve had his foot up on a stool with an ice pack on his ankle. He and his wife had joined my parents for their annual mid-October get-together. The four of them had been doing that since their kids finished high school. My husband and I had come up from our home in Indianapolis to be with them for the afternoon, mainly to show off our son. Steve and Audrey, my godparents, hadn't seen him yet. My parents and godparents had been friends since they were in college. Our families often vacationed together when I was growing up. My life became even more intertwined with Steve's when my parents insisted that I attend college at their alma mater. Aside from meeting my husband, the only thing that made it bearable for me was that Steve was on the faculty there. He became my advisor, and I took several courses from him as part of my English major. Over the years, I had learned that I could talk to him about anything. Did you have any trouble getting Seth down for his nap? Steve asked. No, he was really tired from all that play after lunch. I'm going to leave the front door open so I can hear him. The owners of the bed and breakfast had rolled a crib into the living room. I scooted my chair closer to the door. He's a cute little guy, my godfather went on. I envy Rudd and Kay having a grandson already. It's a miracle, considering what a difficult pregnancy you had. It was scary, and the worst part was hearing the doctor say that it would be okay for me to have that it would be risky for me to have any more children. Charles and I wanted three. Thus, we sat for a moment silently, enjoying the golden red leaves. Century-old trees ran along each side of the street, which sloped down toward the main part of town. Several other majestic houses there had been restored, but compared to the one where we were staying, they were like smaller gems surrounding the central stone in a setting. That particular bed and breakfast boasted a seven-color paint job, dark woodwork, and Victorian wallpaper throughout the interior. I felt a sudden sense that I was in an unknown place, a fairy castle where I'd never been before and never would be again. The rules of everyday life didn't apply there. Maybe that illusion of freedom, the heady sense that none of this was quite real, was what prompted me to delve into something I'd been wondering about for months. I had thought I would never have the chance, let alone the nerve, to discuss it with anyone, and now here was the perfect opportunity with just the right person. Steve, you asked me a few minutes ago if I wanted the truth. If I ask you a personal question, will you tell me the truth? I can't exactly run away, can I? He raised his sprained ankle and set it gently back on the cushion. I'm serious, Steve. He looked at me as though anticipating what I was going to ask. His eerie knack for always knowing what I was thinking was one of the things that had started me wondering about the question I wanted to ask now. "Lauren, before you go any further," he said, "think back to that mythology course you took from me in college. Do you remember how people would ask a favor of a god and the god would say, 'I'll grant anything you want'? What always happened to the people who asked? They usually got zapped because the request would backfire in some way they'd never expected. Usually, name me one case where they didn't get zapped." "Okay, always. There's a lesson there. But you're not a god. I'm your godfather." I rolled my eyes at his feeble joke. "Remember, I was also your advisor," he pointed out, "and my advice is to think long and hard about the possible fallout before you ask any loaded questions." His seriousness made me hesitate for just a second. Was I about to say something that I would come to regret? But now I felt like I did the first time I went off the high diving board, like I'd never tried anything that big before. I was poised on the edge with my hands raised over my head. How could I turn back now? "I'm just going to ask a question," I said. "If you don't want to answer it, that's fine. But the mere fact that you've spoken the words could change everything, whether you get an answer or not." My ears perked up as I heard a noise from inside the house, but it wasn't Seth. I turned my attention back to the porch. "Steve, I've thought about this a lot, and I have to ask. God, how do I ask this? Are you my father?" He closed his eyes and leaned his head against the back of his chair, but he wouldn't look at me. "The simple answer is no. If we just leave it at that and don't say another word, we might be able to contain the damage." He leaned forward and gestured toward the street. "Hey, isn't that the most gorgeous sugar maple you've ever seen?" I just glanced at the tree. "Probably so. What damage?" I asked a question and you answered it. "How does that damage anything, Steve?" "You couldn't let it go, could you?" He laughed ruefully. "That's okay. The people in the myths never could either. Maybe that's actually the lesson we're supposed to learn from. But if the answer is no, then what's the harm in asking?" I moved from the chair beside him to lean against the porch rail so that I was facing him. "Just asking the question speaks volumes about what you think of your mother and of me. Even being able to think up the question means that you believe that she and I could have had an affair, or at the very least cheated on our spouses at one time. Neither of us is that kind of person. Surely you know that." He finally looked up at me. There was no trace of humor on his face. "But by asking the question, you've changed our whole relationship, mine and yours. We'll never look at one another in quite the same way again." His voice had an edge to it that I'd never heard before. Suddenly, I felt like one of those people in the old myths, face to face with an angry god. "Steve, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make you mad." "Oh, Lauren, I'm not angry at you." He shook his head and took a deep breath. "I don't think I could ever be angry at you. In a perverse sort of way, I'm flattered. But why would you ask such a thing?" I fussed with the ice pack on his ankle while I gathered the courage to look him in the eye. "Since I was a kid, I've always liked you better than my dad, and I felt guilty about that. But you're a kinder person. You're easier to talk to. You know what an awful time Dad and I had when I was in high school. We could hardly get through a day without arguing about something. Things are a lot better now, but it's still not easy being around him. I didn't mean any disrespect to you and Mom by asking what I did. It's okay. Every kid goes through a stage when they feel so alienated from their parents. They wonder if they were adopted or switched at birth. I laughed. When I was a teenager, I hoped I was adopted. I didn't want Rudd Garrett to be my father. Watching you with your kids, that was what I always wanted from my dad. He took my hand. Lauren, I have enjoyed immensely being your godfather and your advisor. You've turned out to be a daughter that any parent would be proud of. I hope I've contributed in some small way to who you are. I couldn't help but blush a little. May I ask you something else? Hun, do you really want to do this? I had launched myself from the high board and was plummeting toward the water. There was no way I could stop now, so I took a deep breath and prepared for the impact. You're in love with my mother, aren't you? He smiled and squeezed my hand. Zap! And she's in love with you, isn't she? What noise should I make for a gigantic backfire? Kaboom! I put my hand over his. Could you tell me about it? What's that old joke? I could tell you, but then I'd have to kill you. I leaned back over the railing and glanced down the street toward town. The sidewalk was deserted. It would be worth it just to know. We've got an hour or so before they get back. Please tell me. First, let me ask you a question. What made you suspect? I was helping Mom put some pictures in albums last summer. There were some shots from these October get-togethers the last few years. Yeah, we have this ritual of finding someone to take at least one picture of the four of us together each year. Maybe you could do the honors this time. I'd be glad to. That way I can watch to see if you and Mom stand next to each other with Audrey and Dad on the outside, like you've done every year. You may have your arm around Audrey in those pictures, but you and Mom are always leaning just a little toward one another or standing close enough to be touching. Seeing that started me thinking about the times I've seen you two together. Mom always brightens up whenever you're around. Today she suggested that I go on the walk. She said she'd stay here and put Seth down for his nap and take care of you. I would have enjoyed that. He quickly put a hand on my arm. Not that I'm not enjoying talking with you and possibly watching my whole life unravel. I won't tell anybody if that's what you're worried about. I was a little miffed that he was even concerned about it. It's not a matter of won't, Lauren. You can't tell anybody. Not Kay, not Charles, not anybody. Over the years, I've grown accustomed to living with this secret, but the possibility that it might come out is always lurking in the back of my mind. I'm afraid I might talk in my sleep. I've often wondered when Rudd would notice or if he's aware of the situation and just doesn't want to say anything. Don't worry, Dad is so dense, he probably won't figure it out if he caught the two of you in bed together. I couldn't believe I was talking that way about my own parents. I loved them, of course, but over the years I'd sensed that they weren't happy. But did that justify my mother sharing a secret relationship with another man? We've never been to bed together, in case you're wondering, Steve remarked. Actually, I was. I scooted a chair over close to his. I was still close enough to the door that I could hear Seth if he cried. Please tell me all about it. He looked out at the trees for a moment. A light breeze brought the scent of a neighbor's barbecue. Hun, you have to understand how difficult this is for me. I never thought I'd tell anyone about it. I don't want to betray Kay's trust, and just as importantly, I don't want to hurt Audrey. You have to promise me that you won't breathe a word of this to anyone, not anyone. I promise. The words felt as solemn as my wedding vows, implying a lifelong commitment, and yet I was making a pledge to a man, not my father, who claimed to be in love with my mother. Talk about a sense of unreality. All right, brace yourself. You know that Rudd, Kay, Audrey, and I all came to college together as freshmen. None of us knew the others. The first time I saw Kay, I got weak all over. That's trite, but it's the only way I can describe it. I was an English major. I'd read and analyzed all kinds of love poems, even written a couple, but I'd never actually understood them. I'd never felt them until I met her. How did you meet? A little smile played in the corner of his mouth. Well, the first time I saw her was in the library. She sat down at a table next to mine. I didn't get anything done for the rest of the evening. She wasn't even aware of me. She was very outgoing, very popular. She always had a lot of people, lots of guys around her. All at that stage in my life, I was painfully shy. I'm still not an extrovert by any means, but I'm much more open now than I was back then. I made a couple of clumsy attempts to speak to Kay, but I never even registered on her radar screen. The next semester, though, I found myself in a class with Audrey. And Audrey was Mom's roommate, right? Yes, I made a point of sitting next to Audrey and getting to know her because I thought she might say something about me to Kay. It was manipulative, I know, but it was the only way I could see to bring myself to Kay's attention. By then, though, Rudd, the big football player and freshman class president, had her in his sights. The four of you went on a double date, didn't you? I've heard Mom talk about that. We did. Kay and Audrey joined the same sorority. They held an annual spring dance. It was a really big deal. Off campus, tuxes and formals, the whole bit. Audrey asked me to go. Then it turned into a double date because I had a car and Rudd's had broken down. I remember looking in the rearview mirror and there was Kay with him, so close and yet completely out of my reach. That's the way it's been the whole time I've known her. His voice sounded sad, but not bitter. Couldn't you tell her how you felt? At the time, it didn't seem the right thing to do. She had a boyfriend, and I knew Audrey was seriously interested in me. Our marriage has actually turned out to be a good one. I have great affection and respect for her, but you don't love her. Like the song says, what's love got to do with it? He shook his head. No, I never have loved her, but we've been happier than a lot of people who were madly in love when they got married. Do you tell Audrey that you love her? Yes, because she deserves to hear it. Mostly I tell her now that I love her just as much today as I did the day we were married, and that's true. I folded my arms across my chest. Suddenly I was seeing a lifelong friend as a betrayer, a liar. Yet he was doing it because he was in love with my mother. What kind of sense did that make? I guess you've been lucky that the four of you have remained friends over the years, I said then. Luck had nothing to do with it. I've worked hard to keep this friendship going. After we graduated from college and got married, I realized that if the four of us remained friends, I could at least see Kay now and then and write or call her. So I committed myself to making this arrangement work. Ironically, your dad and I have actually become pretty good friends. I cocked an ear toward the door, not because I thought I actually heard Seth, but because I needed a moment to absorb what he had told me so far. My stomach was knotting up on me, not surprisingly, considering that a beloved friend of the family was telling me that he loved my mother. "When did you say something to Mom?" I finally asked. "That happened in two stages. When you were five, I was staying with your folks while I was at a conference by myself in Cincinnati. Rudd was out at some business dinner, so Kay and I had a long evening to talk. It was clear that something was troubling her. She didn't need much urging to tell me that she was very unhappy. Rudd seemed to have lost interest in her and was becoming increasingly difficult to get along with. She told me that she'd almost packed a suitcase and had planned to leave him, but she didn't know where she'd go with a young child and little job experience. Is that when you told her how you felt about her? No, I thought it would be taking advantage of her to say anything then. It was almost 2 years later. Our families were at that cabin where we've stayed a couple of times. That place where I almost drowned? Right, but that was several years later. On this particular summer day, Audrey and Rudd were off fishing. All of you kids were off playing with the kids from the next cabin. Kay and I were doing the dishes. We started talking and everything just spilled out. It was completely unplanned. If you hadn't barged in on us, I'm not sure what might have happened. My God, I remember that. I had skinned my knee, and when I came into the kitchen, you and Mom were hugging. But I'd seen you two hug before. I guess I was too concerned about my knee to think anything of it. If you'd gotten there 2 minutes earlier when we were kissing, you probably would have thought something of it. Yes, kissing, I would have noticed. I rubbed my hands over my eyes. This was a lot to take in at one sitting. What frightened me was the urge I was already feeling to tell somebody. Steve and my mom had carried this secret with grace for all those years. Could I be that strong? Why don't you just get divorced so you can be together? I asked. This isn't the 50s anymore. Divorce is no disgrace. Your kids are all grown. What's holding you back? Audrey, you mean you think she would fight it? No, I mean she would be devastated. There's no way I would hurt her. Imagine how you would feel if Charles told you I never have loved you. You've only been married for 4 years. Audrey and I have been together for 28, and she considers Kay her best friend. No, Kay and I agreed a long time ago that we just couldn't do that to her. I guess I had to give them some credit for being that considerate. But you love each other. Shouldn't you be together? That's the way your generation thinks, hon. I want it, therefore I should have it. The way Kay and I see it, there was a moment when we might have gotten together. We missed it, and our lives moved along different paths. We have no right now to shatter several other lives just to satisfy ours. In spite of myself, I felt kind of sorry for them. How do you stand it? How do you stand it just seeing each other a few times a year? We email through our offices every day and talk on the phone several times a week. And we send each other cards on our birthdays and other special occasions. My mom's laugh startled us then. The shopping party was on their way up the hill, a lot closer than we'd realized. Steve regarded me intently. You promised you wouldn't say anything, Lauren, he reminded me. Please keep your word. We're back, Audrey sang as they turned onto the sidewalk leading to the house. Mom was the first one up the steps. Even with a bit of gray in her dark hair, she was still very pretty and vivacious. A man might well have spent his life yearning for her. Did the baby give you any trouble? She asked. No, Seth's been asleep the whole time, I said. Mom put her hand on Steve's shoulder. I meant the big baby here. Then she nuzzled and kissed him on the cheek as if he were a baby. It looked like two friends horsing around. Dad laughed. Audrey's sunglasses kept me from reading her reaction. Charles was an ER doctor, was on duty the next morning, so we drove back to Indianapolis that evening. All the way home, I kept glancing at him, wondering if he actually loved me. What about the girl he dated before we met? Did he still think about her? Was this the beginning of the backfire from my question that I would start to doubt my own marriage? In a way, I was glad to know the truth about Mom and Steve, but I could also sense how heavy a burden that secret would prove to be. Something on your mind? Charles finally asked. Do you love me as much as you did the day we got married? He blinked in surprise. Of course. Why would you even ask that? His quick answer sounded sincere, but I bet Steve had sounded sincere when he'd said it for all those years. I don't know. I guess now that we're parents, I look at my parents and Steve and Audrey, and I wonder what we'll be like when we're that age. In all kindness, I hope we're more like Steve and Audrey than your folks. What do you mean, honey? I asked nervously. It's no secret that your folks' marriage is a little rough around the edges. We've talked about that. But Steve and Audrey seem to have a really solid relationship. She obviously adores him, and he's so attentive to her. That was a beautiful necklace he gave her for their anniversary. I quickly turned away so that Charles wouldn't notice my tears. On Sunday evening, Mom and Dad stopped by to spend the night with us on their way home. Inviting them had seemed like a great idea a few days earlier. I knew they wanted to take advantage of every opportunity they had to see Seth. But Steve was right. Not only would I never look at him in the same light again, I would never see my mother the same way either. I had always resented the way my dad disappears from the kitchen when it's time to fix a meal, then reappears when the food hits the table. Charles is good about pitching in, but when Dad is around, my dear husband behaves like a caveman, too. The two of them were drawn to the television, so that left Mom and me alone to fix dinner. I didn't particularly want to be alone with her right then. I tried to talk about Seth, but there's only so much you can say about one day in the life of a 9-month-old. Soon she got to talking about how the get-together with Steve and Audrey had gone after we left, the very topic I was trying to avoid. Steve seemed to be in a strange mood on Saturday night. Was he upset about anything when you two were talking on the porch? I evaded her question. Are you that sensitive to Steve's moods? She shrugged as though it didn't really matter. When you've known somebody for 30 years, you can read them pretty well, and Steve's more open about his feelings than most men. Sometimes I feel like I know him better than I know your father. That's not surprising, I thought, when you phone and email him several times a week. How often do you talk to Dad? I was so close to saying something, but Charles and Dad were right there on the other side of the kitchen counter. Even if they were absorbed in the television, I slipped some crescent rolls into the oven and willed myself to keep quiet, though. I couldn't help but wonder if Mom was actually hinting at something. After dinner, Dad and Charles settled down to watch a baseball playoff game. Mom and I ended up in Seth's room while I nursed him and got him ready for bed. Didn't Steve and Audrey give him that outfit? Mom asked when I pulled a sleeper out of the drawer. I could have kicked myself. We had gotten away from that topic, and I didn't want to get jerked back to it. Of all the sleepers I could have picked up. Yes, I believe they did, I murmured. They certainly have meant a lot to our family, and now that relationship is passing on to the next generation. You don't often find that kind of friendship these days. Is this leading up to something, Mother? I suddenly had an awful foreboding that she had decided to tell me about her and Steve. She adjusted the bumpers in Seth's crib. No, I'm just saying how fortunate we've been to have such good friends for all these years. Don't you mean friends and lovers? I just blurted it out. Mom looked at me like I'd spoken in a foreign language. What? Steve told me yesterday all about you and him. I put Seth in the bed, trying to be as casual as I could. It shook me at first, but I can see how it could happen. I'm certainly not going to tell anyone else. Mom sat down in the rocker, clutching her stomach and breathing hard. God, I can't believe this. Steve and I promised that we would never say anything to anybody, not under any circumstances. Damn him. Mom, you shouldn't be mad at Steve. I kind of suspected, and I badgered him into telling me. He didn't just volunteer the information. Seth started to whimper as he picked up on Mom's anger. I don't care. This ruins everything. What right does he have? Mom, it's okay. No, it's not okay. She jumped up from the chair and stormed out of the room. I didn't even want to think about the phone calls and emails that would be flying back and forth between those two for the next few days. I thought that maybe I should get myself into the loop and try to smooth things out. Mom and Dad left at about 8:30 the next morning. That was one important clue to how angry she was at me. It's only a couple of hours from Indianapolis to Cincinnati. They could easily have waited until later that day when the traffic wouldn't be as bad. But Mom had all kinds of reasons for wanting to get on the road early. She had a lot to say to Seth, but almost nothing to me. I waved Seth's hand as they pulled out of the driveway. Mom was driving because Dad has some problems with his peripheral vision. She usually does the driving for them, especially in heavy traffic. She waved at us but didn't smile. I spent a quiet couple of hours playing with Seth, but my mind was on Steve and Mom. I thought about emailing Steve, but I knew that I needed to let Mom talk to him first. Then he and I could have the I told you so talk, and he would be absolutely right. He told me so. Zap. Kaboom. About 10:30, the phone rang. It was Charles calling from the hospital. He often calls at lunchtime, but it was unusual to hear from him at that time of day. As soon as he said my name, I knew there was something wrong. Lauren, I have to tell you something, and I need for you to stay calm. What is it? What's wrong, Charles? It's your mom and dad. They had an accident on Interstate 465 near the Meridian Street exit. Oh, God, no. Are they all right? I won't kid you, hon. They're not in very good shape, especially your mom. They've taken her to surgery. You need to get down here as soon as you can. I knew I was hurrying, but I felt like I was moving with weights tied to my ankles. My neighbor across the street has a toddler, and we often help one another out with babysitting, so finding a place for Seth wasn't a problem. Traffic on Interstate 465, the beltway around Indianapolis, had passed its morning peak. By 11, it was merely awful. It's like the Indy 500 is run there every day. As I zoomed past the Meridian Street exit, I could see some broken glass and other smashed bits of a car that had been swept over to the shoulder of the highway. I shuddered. Charles had a hospital volunteer waiting at the door for me. She told me my mom was still in surgery and took me straight to the room where my dad was. With the four and a couple of, with the IV and a couple of other tubes in him, plus the bandage over his eye and the cast on his arm, he looked pretty bad. He was breathing softly. Dad, I said, putting my hand on his chest. He opened his other eye and took my hand. Hi, hon. I'm so glad that you're here. Do you know anything about your mom? She's in surgery. That's all I know. What happened? I'm not sure. The traffic was awful. I told Kay we should have waited a couple of hours, but she didn't have much to say to me. She seemed kind of distracted. Then a truck pulled over on us. The police said somebody cut in front of him. His rear wheels caught us. I saw him when he started to veer over, but your mom didn't react in time. It wasn't like her. She's always been a good driver. How could I tell him that I knew what was on mom's mind? I was the one who had distracted her. I was the one responsible for the accident. A doctor came in and told us that Dad's worst injuries were a broken arm and a cracked rib. They would keep him overnight for observation to make sure he didn't have a concussion or any internal injuries. I'd been in Dad's room about an hour when Charles came in. "I've got a few minutes for lunch," he told me. "I'm not the least bit hungry," I said. When I saw the look in his eye, I knew that food wasn't the reason he wanted me out of the room. He led me to a small, pleasantly furnished room down the hall where families could confer with their doctors, away from the patients. A doctor I had never met was in there, still in scrubs. He stood when we entered and Charles introduced him. He was the surgeon who had operated on my mother. From the way Charles held my hand as we sat down, I knew what he was going to say. "Lauren, there's no easy way for me to tell you this," the surgeon began. "Your mother's injuries were just too severe. We weren't able to save her. I hope you understand that we did all we could. I'm truly sorry." What does he have to be sorry for? I thought as my tears started. He hadn't killed her. I had. The next 4 days blurred together. There were endless phone calls to my grandparents, to a funeral home, to mom's office, to my parents' minister. Planning a funeral long distance is like preparing a military campaign without knowing exactly what the terrain is. I hoped that what we were doing was appropriate, but we wouldn't know until we were actually there. I played the coward when it came to calling Steve that first day. I called at home in the evening when I knew Audrey would be there. Luck was with me because Steve was at a faculty meeting. My news devastated Audrey, as I knew it would. When Steve called back later that night, there wasn't much either of us could say. "Do you want me to come down and help you out?" he offered. "Thanks, but no. I'm bringing Dad home tomorrow, so I'll have my hands full taking care of him and Seth. I'll see you and Audrey in Cincinnati for the funeral." If he couldn't talk openly over the phone, he could unburden himself in email. Charles and I have separate addresses because so much of his email is business-related. Steve and I had emailed occasionally since I graduated, but his name didn't appear all that often in my list of messages. The next morning, I received a long message from him. I realized that he had no one else to talk to about this. He had lost the woman he loved, but he had to grieve over her as just a friend. Maybe it was all for the best that we talked when we did. He wrote, "It certainly wouldn't be fair for me to tell you about this now." How could I tell him that if he hadn't told me, then my mother, his lover, would have been alive and well. Maybe someday they would have gotten a chance to be together. "Be a little more honest with yourself," an inner voice chided me. "If you hadn't brought it up, he never would have told you. It's not his fault. All the blame falls on you. If you hadn't blabbed to your mother, she wouldn't have been upset and distracted when she was driving. She wouldn't have left until later in the day. The accident never would have happened. Somehow we got through the funeral. I managed to avoid being alone with Steve. I didn't want to take a chance that he would ask me if I'd said anything to my mom or that I might tell him without meaning to. I would have to tell him someday, but I felt like I would fall apart completely if I had to admit that I had done right then, what I had done right then. Charles went back to Indianapolis the day after the funeral. Steve and Audrey flew home too. I stayed for a few days to make sure that Dad would be all right by himself and to clean out Mom's office. That was something I dreaded doing, but I had to because I didn't know what sort of memorabilia from Steve she might have kept. I couldn't risk having a coworker dump all her stuff into a box and deliver it to Dad. My dad's next-door neighbor agreed to watch. Seth, early one afternoon, well, I went... My dad's next-door neighbor agreed to watch Seth early one afternoon while I went to Mom's office. Mom sold real estate in her firm. Each agent had a cubicle with a desk, a computer, and a file cabinet. The secretary who worked for Mom and several other agents offered condolences when I came in. After we talked for a few minutes, she showed me Mom's cubicle and asked, "Do you have a key to her file cabinet?" I fished Mom's key ring out of my purse. "I hope it's on here." "Good, I was afraid we'd have to call a locksmith. I wanted to wait until someone from her family came here first. We've distributed her prospects to other agents. Her desk was unlocked, so I did get some files that we needed out of there." She stopped and put a hand on my arm. "I'm sorry if I'm being insensitive or rushing you, hon. I've never had to handle anything like this before." "I know, it's all new to me too. Do you mind if I take just a few minutes to sort things out? Take all the time you need." 3 small keys hung on Mom's ring, one of which proved to unlock her desk. All that was left in it were personal items, which I put in one of the boxes I'd brought in with me. I took the key off the ring and left it in the lock of the middle drawer. I had brought 2 boxes, one which I planned to fill with whatever would go back to Dad. The other was for anything that might connect Mom with Steve. That stuff would go in the trunk of my car until I decided what to do with it. I put the pictures from the desk and the walls into one box. I didn't know where the decorative pieces had come from, but at least they didn't have "I love you" written all over them. Another key unlocked her file cabinet. As I pulled out a drawer, I wondered what the third key was for. Perhaps a file cabinet somewhere else in the building, or did she have one at home? The top 3 drawers contained business files, about 20 years worth of Valentine's birthday cards, Christmas cards, letters, and emails that Mom had printed out. There was a branch in the mail nearby. That had to explain the last key. I felt oddly disconnected from what I was seeing. It was my mother's stuff, and yet it was as if it belonged to someone I never knew. What I found the most touching, and yet the thing that made me angriest, was a framed picture of just the 2 of them. It had been cropped from one of their group pictures at an October get-together. All that remained of Audrey and my dad were traces of their arms along the outer edge of the picture. Mom and Steve had literally cut those other 2 people out of their lives. I dumped the entire contents of the drawer into the second box. I locked the box of Steve's stuff in my car's trunk. Did I want to read those letters? Should I ship everything to Steve, or should I just burn it? I asked myself those questions as I walked down to the mailbox's place. Mom's box contained mostly junk mail. I emptied it into the box and went to the counter to turn in the key. I'm afraid the person who rented the box is the only one who can cancel it. The clerk said, "Well, she can't do that. She's dead." "Oh, I see. I'm sorry." She reached under the counter and pulled out a form. "She died in an accident," I said. Although the clerk hadn't asked, I laid the key on the counter and signed the form. I wanted to say, "I caused it. I killed her." I needed to say that out loud to somebody, anyone. When I got in the car, I examined the one piece of real mail that had been in Mom's box. The return address was some medical clinic downtown. It turned out to be a quarterly bill for storing frozen embryos for Mom and Steve. "Frozen embryos? What's this about?" I muttered out loud, dialing Steve's office number. "Lauren," he said, picking up immediately, "it's nice to hear from you. How are you doing?" His warm voice took me back to times when I'd soaked up every word he'd said in class. He could be spellbinding. "I'm not doing so well, Steve. You've suffered a tremendous loss, hon. We both have. It'll take time." "That's not it. It seems there's a little part of your secret that you forgot to tell me about." "What do you mean? Does the phrase frozen embryos mean anything to you?" I could almost hear him flinch. "How'd you find out?" "It doesn't matter. I want to know what is going on." He sighed heavily. "Yes, of course, you have every right to know. No more secrets between us. Steve, sometimes I wonder if I'm ever going to learn the whole truth about this relationship. And of course, I had my own secrets now. Like mother, like daughter, I thought I couldn't tell Dad or Charles about Steve and Mom, and I couldn't tell Steve that I'd betrayed his trust and told Mom. Lauren, I swear there's nothing else for you to know. Kay and I realized that we would never have children together. Even if we did get together someday, we'd be too old for children. Then we came up with the possibility of having our child through a surrogate mother. Although we knew we couldn't raise the baby ourselves, we felt it would mean a lot just to know that the two of us had created a child. So we had some of her eggs harvested and fertilized with my sperm. "When did you do this?" I hope my voice sounded calmer than I felt. "About 4 years ago. Rudd was out of town at some company meeting. I flew to Cincinnati and back in one day. Audrey never knew. Where did you plan to find a surrogate mother?" That was the sticking point. The more we talked about it, we knew we would find it difficult not to see our child or to know how the child was being raised. We weren't able yet to commit ourselves to that. Kay once joked that maybe you could carry the child, but that would mean telling you about our relationship. She was absolutely opposed to telling you. "But you told me, and now I'm glad I did. I couldn't have come to you after your mother's death and told you something like that. I'd have to keep it to myself for the rest of my life. If only I could tell him how much I wished he had kept it to himself. But I asked him to tell me. It always came back to that. For the next week, I agonized over a decision that I think I had already made. On some level, I would do anything if I could bring back my mother or even some little part of her. Finally, I called Steve one morning. The conversation was short on the usual social amenities. "Steve, this is Lauren." "Hi, hon. How are you? Can you authorize the use of those embryos?" "Yes." "Why?" "Because I want to have this baby." "Are you serious?" "Absolutely. I want to have a baby for you and Mom. Then you don't have to worry about giving your child away to some stranger." "But Lauren, that could be very risky for you. You know that." "Yes, I do, but it's a risk I'm willing to take for Mom." "What about Charles? What will you tell him?" "I'll tell him I'm pregnant." "Well, not meaning to pry too much, but aren't you two trying not to have children?" We use protection, but it's not foolproof. Everybody knows that. Steve paused. So you'll just let him think it's his child? That would be the simplest way. It's Mom's baby, and I look a lot like her. The child will probably look something like me. Lauren, you may think this is the right thing to do, but it could become a very complex business down the line somewhere. Do you think you can keep that secret for the rest of your life? Steve, lately I've seen up close what happens when people start telling secrets. It's been a costly lesson, but I've learned it. I will keep this secret. If you can keep your mouth shut, we'll be okay. I want to do this as a way of keeping something of my mother alive. I owe her that in ways you'll never know. Is that really worth risking your life? I think it is. I waited for him to say something. What if I don't agree? He finally asked. What if I don't release the embryos? Well, I don't want to be cruel about it, but if you don't help me, Steve, then I'll see a lawyer about those embryos. Think about a mess that would be. Audrey and my dad will find out. It'll be in the papers. All right. I could hear the surrender in his voice. I'll call the clinic and get things set up. Do you realize that there's no guarantee they'll accept you as a surrogate? They have to match up blood types, do a bunch of tests. I know all that. I've done a lot of reading this past week. We won't know what the situation is unless we try, will we? There was a long pause. Then he said, was it just a couple of weeks ago that we were sitting on the porch of that bed and breakfast? I kept telling myself that if I'd been more careful and hadn't sprained my stupid ankle, none of this would ever have happened. It's all my fault. No, Steve, it's not. It's really not. We can't keep beating ourselves up about what's already happened. We can't change that. Let's look ahead. You and Mom are going to have a baby. Okay, well, that was a really unusual story. I hope you enjoyed it. And that is going to do it for this edition of the Romance Program. As always, thank you so much for listening. I've enjoyed reading to you. This has been Volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. Have a great week and take care of yourselves. I will talk to you later. Bye-bye.